Welcome to the Underwater Technology Podcast from SUT, the Society for Underwater Technology. I'm Emily Boddy, Communications and Publications Officer at the SUT.
And I'm Andrew Connolly with the SUT Aberdeen Branch and SUT Council.
Each week we bring you interviews with our members, guests and colleagues from the global underwater technology community. Podcast 61, 10th of June 2021. In this episode, we talk with James Ives, CEO of Xocean. James talks about offering ocean data collection as a turnkey service and how Xocean achieves this using uncrewed surface vessels to provide remotely captured survey data to global clients.
My guest today is James Ives from Xocean. Welcome to the Underwater Technology Podcast, James.
Thanks very much. Great to be here and thanks for inviting me on today.
Excellent. So, James, we're going to learn a little bit today about Xocean and what you guys get up to. But before that, can you let us know a little bit about yourself?
Sure, yes. So I started life in the UK where I studied engineering. Early part of my career was initially in the automotive sector where I was an engineer looking at combustion systems and thermal management of engines and powertrains. Would have worked with everything from large ship engines right the way through to Formula One systems. I then had a shift in career and I spent several years in London working for the management consultancy Accenture before venturing really into the startup world. And obviously we're going to talk about Xocean today.
Excellent. That's a bit of a shift between different types of jobs before progressing into something that's a bit of a subsea flavour. Are you finding it a nice step to go into the subsea world?
Yeah, so really, I guess the sort of the two passions in my life have always been engineering and really the marine environment. So I guess that makes Xocean a great place to be. And really, over the last 15 years, I've really been focusing on technology businesses in the marine sector. So that marries those interests really well.
Excellent. Yeah. So Xocean, what's the history background of your organization?
So prior to Xocean, I was the CEO of a marine technology business for some 12 years. And it was interesting because as part of that business, we would have commissioned a large number of surveys. And to be honest, I was always somewhat frustrated with the whole process. Often there were delays in delivering the data, the costs were difficult to manage, and often the quality of the data wasn't quite what we were looking for. So I guess I was a frustrated customer. We ultimately sold that last business to a large multinational. And after I'd left that business, I couldn't stop thinking that there had to really be a better way to collect ocean data. And ultimately, that led to the formation of Xocean back in 2017.
Okay, that's certainly looking for a solution to where you've had a direct problem.
Being ultimately a customer of a service in advance of creating the solution to it is a really good place for a business to start from.
Yeah, for sure. So you guys know the market need already. Tell us a bit about the product and service offering of Xocean then. How do you guys operate and what is the offering?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the big backdrop here is clearly the ocean economy is predicted to grow dramatically over the next decade, I think going up to 3 trillion, according to the OECD. And we would believe that data is really the foundation of this growth. So I guess what we're looking to do is try to innovate in really two different ways. The first is through how we collect that data. So rather than using a conventional vessel with a crew on board, we've developed uncrewed technology. And we think that's got really good benefits. First of all, safety, so nobody needs to go offshore. The second one is the environment. So we have around about 1/1000th of the emissions of a conventional vessel. And ultimately, we believe we can deliver the data at a lower cost. But I think the second way that we're looking to innovate is how we contract to deliver that data. So we don't sell our USV technology. Instead, we own and operate the systems ourselves. So ultimately, it's the data that we collect, that we deliver to our customers. And we do that on a sort of fixed price turnkey basis. So ultimately, we're taking all the risk and ultimately, we're delivering data to our customers.
Okay. I guess a slightly different approach to survey, perhaps. And certainly, you're talking there about uncrewed surface vessels. I mean, a lot of us are aware of various uncrewed surface vessels, but this is sort of combining the survey service with the uncrewed surface vessel service. Is that the way it is?
Yeah, I think that's correct. And I think really what we're seeing is that we think ultimately this is about the data, that the deliverable that's required here is really high quality data that's delivered on a timely basis. And we think that an unmanned system or an uncrewed system is the right way to collect that data for those benefits that I mentioned, you know, the safety benefits, the low carbon footprint, and ultimately cost as well. So we think that the two marry really well in terms of sort of transforming how the industry provides data to the clients.
Absolutely. Yeah, it sounds like a bit of a game changer. Changing development to move away from the traditional large survey ships, as you say, something that's a thousandth of the power consumption to go and operate survey capture. So, sounds like an excellent approach. Has that been an evolutionary offering, or has it been, you know, a step change development? How has that development come about?
Yeah, so I mean, I think initially when we started the business, we were, and I think what we're seeing is we're constantly evolving the types of data that we collect. So I say in the early years, it was mainly shallow water, sort of hydrographic type of survey work that we were undertaking with the vessel. But what we found is we found a really strong pull from our clients that have encouraged us to expand the types of data and the offerings that we have to cover different activities. So, for example, we've added the ability to do asset integrity inspection. So, you know, looking at things like export cables and pipelines, adding sub-bottom profiling. So, again, looking at sort of buried cables, buried pipelines, and cathodic protection surveys. And then on the environmental side, things like fisheries surveys, both seabed and in-water column surveys. So I guess ultimately what we've tried to do is expand the range of data that we can deliver based on listening to our clients and getting their feedback.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it sounds like a really widespread of survey services that you provide. Is there any disadvantage or any sort of capabilities that you wouldn't have compared to deploying a, you know, a normal survey vessel?
I think when you get into the sort of physical types of surveys, so, you know, drilling cores into the seabed, those sort of, you know, very heavy engineering types of data collection, you know, they're things that we can't do with a vessel that's effectively the size of an average car and about half its weight. So there are limitations to sorts of data that we can collect. So we do see that there's obviously a place for the larger vessels that are doing the more heavy type of construction and data collection work. But what we can do is where we can collect the data, we believe we can offer an alternative solution.
Sure, sure. And then I guess for being an uncrewed vessel, you know, you could perhaps go out for longer survey trips because you don't have to return to shore to change crew or stock up to feed them. Yeah, do you see that as an advantage?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point because, you know, typically a crewed vessel will come into shore for a port call, you know, to change the crew over, reprovision, those types of activities. We can stay out. We can stay out and survey in some pretty bad weather as well. But when we come into port, primarily we're coming to port for data drops. So we're collecting, you know, huge volumes of data, terabytes of data. And so what we find is that we don't come into port to change the crew. What we do is we come into port just to drop the data, swap some hard drives over, and then we head back out again. So yeah, I mean, we can stay out for weeks at a time collecting data, and it's really the data drops are sort of the key thing that forces us into port.
How's that powered over time? And is it generally diesel powered, or do you look at solar panels on your vessels for reduced carbon footprint?
Yeah, so really all of that. So we operate a hybrid system. So we've got large lithium ion batteries on board the vessel. We then charge those using a solar array. So we have a deck that's fitted with solar panels. And then we also have a small micro diesel generator to top up the batteries as well. So ultimately, the power system is coming from both conventional and renewable sources. But I guess one of the key things for us is that because we're such a small platform and we've got such a low power requirement, we're around about a thousandth of the emissions of a conventional vessel. So very small fuel consumption, very small emissions.
Sounds excellent. I've seen some pictures of the Exocean survey craft and they look very sleek and very modern and what you'd expect to see from sort of modern survey services. It looks great. What's the primary market for your services?
Broadly falling into three sectors that we've operated mostly in terms of to date. So the first would be the oil and gas industry. So we would have delivered multiple projects for people such as BP and Shell and Equinor, doing conventional types of surveys such as, you know, asset integrity inspections, those sorts of things. Government agencies would be the second, so doing hydrographic surveys. So, for example, just before Christmas, we finished a large volume of work for the Canadian Hydrographic Service to do seabed mapping work. Really, the third area, though, and fastest growing aboard is really offshore wind. This is where we're seeing, I guess, the fastest growth. And clearly, you know, that industry is going to grow 8 to 10 times over the next decade. And it's very, very driven by data. So to date, we've worked for most of the major developers and operated on multiple offshore wind farms. We're nearly on a wind farm every week at this stage. So that's becoming really the fastest growing sector for us.
Yeah, that's hardly surprising, really. I was going to ask if you're seeing a significant market shift towards offshore renewables, which is clearly the case. Is it a global market? Do you serve a global customer base?
Yeah, we do. So we've operated in over 14 countries at this stage. So initially, predominantly around the European market. We've also delivered projects over in Canada, the US, in the Caribbean, and shortly starting operations over in Asia. So quite a large geographic spread in the business. And it's interesting you talk about that energy transition. So, you know, one of the numbers that I really like is one of our oil and gas customers, 3 years ago, 100% of the work we were doing for them was on their conventional business, so primarily asset integrity inspections. This year, that same client, we're delivering over 400 days of operation for them, and 90% of that work is on new energy projects. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's an enormous shift in terms of, I guess, both the adoption of uncrewed systems, but also the shift in terms of energy transition. So I think that's a key area for focus.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's, as you say, clearly the way that the market is going. Do you do ongoing development of your products and services in order to keep advancing and keep improving your reach to the market?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a very, very active R&D team within the business, and we base that around a technology roadmap. And interestingly, what we find is that we sort of split that down into different horizons. So in the near term, what we're focused on is really about integrating new capabilities into the USV. So, you know, we're very interested when somebody brings out a new sensor, for example, that could get higher resolution data or deeper penetration into the seabed. We very much want to be using those systems. So we go through an integration process to bring them onto the vessel. So that's very much in the near term. And also around maximizing the efficiency of the platform. So keeping it offshore for longer, being able to collect data in a more efficient way. They're all about the sort of the near-term horizons. Longer term, we think we're at the tip of the iceberg, really, in terms of the opportunities that uncrewed systems present. So what we do have is a deeper R&D roadmap, which is really looking at the next generation of technologies that are coming through and really being able to expand the offering into areas that we can't reach at the moment. So, you know, further offshore, deeper waters, and really pushing the boundaries of the technology. So, yeah, we broadly split apart our work into those key horizons.
Excellent. From the development work that you undertake, have there been key challenges that you've had to overcome through that?
I guess one of the key early questions we had with the business was really around the environmental limits of surveying with such a small platform. As I said, we're only around the size of an average car. And actually what we've discovered through the process is that we're actually able to get really incredible data quality using a really small platform. And a good example of this is early in the business, we had the opportunity with BP to perform a pipeline survey on 2 consecutive days. The first day was lovely, calm conditions. The second day was 3 meters of wave height, really nasty, short period sea. You know, really, really, you know, about as horrible as it comes. And what we could do afterwards is we could compare those data sets. And what we found was really, really good correlation between the data. The vessel really wasn't getting affected by the conditions that it was in. We've also, in similar vein, we've also completed multiple surveys on offshore wind farms, you know, in December, January weather conditions with, you know, 2.5 meter plus wave conditions. And the feedback we've had from our clients is that the data quality that we're delivering, even in those very challenging conditions on days when actually the wind farm is shut because of the wave heights are too much for crews to get on and off the turbines, is that the quality is better than they've seen before. So I think really that was an initial concern for us. And what we've been able to do is I guess, work through examples that show that actually we're able to collect really good quality data in pretty horrible conditions.
I like the idea of hearing about project challenges, development challenges, and also the idea of successes. And it's amazing to think that, you know, the number of challenges that you hear about, and then out of that is significant success stories, you know, as you say, having flat cam day of survey work before, you know, one day, and then the next day, 3 meter wave height. But, you know, that's actually a great success that you've proven that you can operate in those conditions. It's excellent. And working as uncrewed surface vessels, do you experience limitations about how far away you can work from shore, or do you need to be associated with a mothership, or are you limited by over the horizon effectively?
So fortunately we're not. So the architecture of our system was designed from really the outset to be able to operate fully over the horizon without the need for a mothership. So we use satellite communications to control and manage the vessel. You know, for example, we just recently finished a project for Shell in Norway where we were 120 kilometers offshore on the Ormen Lange gas field, uploading some sensor data. We regularly perform missions in the central North Sea, which are 250 kilometres from shore, again, without a mothership and actually operating within restricted areas on the oil field. So, you know, we're able to send our vessel really long distances offshore and operate it seamlessly. I think one of the examples that we like is, again, looking at projects in Norway, is completing a sensor upload of a data harvesting mission. So uploading sensor data from seabed sensors that are around a gas field that are 1,000 meters below us. The mission profile is really interesting in that we were able to send the USV by freight to Norway. So not a single member of our team had to travel to Norway. We then used a local service provider to launch the vessel and prepare it for us. We then had pilots here in Ireland where we're based piloting the vessel. And by piloting, what that means, it's all driven through automation, but they're keeping watch. They're checking the situational awareness data to basically provide the safety of navigation to the vessel. Alongside them in the UK, there's a completely different skill set. So a survey engineer that's able to log in through our system to the vessel, and they're able to be communicating with these sensors that are 1,000 meters below us. So you've got two different people in two different countries logged into the same vessel, communicating with the sensors. And then on top of that, we're able to deliver the data in real time to the client based in Norway and in Houston. And all of that is without a single person stepping offshore, or in our case, a single person actually being in the country. So I think it really opens up very different ways of working and avoiding the need for people to travel, avoiding the need for people to be offshore. And clearly in COVID times, that's proven to be something that's been hugely valuable.
That's really a tremendous advert for remote operations and remote data, isn't it? When you're talking about a pilot in Ireland, survey operator in the UK, and then the data being delivered seamlessly to both Norway and Houston at the same time. So that's one of these things that, you know, we hear so much about remote operations, remote data, and that's it working, which is great to hear.
And I think building on that, I think when we look at, I guess, some of the successes that we've had in the business. So to date, we would have delivered over 100 projects of that type with 100% data acceptance. And in terms of numbers there, you know, around about 21,000 hours of operation on our system. We mentioned that 14 countries we've operated in. One of the other numbers I really like is that we would have offset around 22,000 tons of CO2 from being emitted if that same work had been done using conventional vessels. So we see, even though we've got a relatively small fleet at the moment, we have 11 of our vessels in service with another four in production. Even with that relatively small penetration, we're seeing that we're able to make quite large impacts, both in terms of the data we're collecting and also the environmental benefits that brings.
Absolutely. A significant reduction in carbon emissions from that type of operation. So you were speaking about 250 kilometres offshore operation. Is that the furthest offshore you've gone, or what is the furthest your vessels have travelled, or, you know, longest deployment time?
Yeah, so longest deployment times, typically, I'd say the maximum has been about a couple of weeks. In terms of furthest offshore, yeah, 250 kilometres would be the furthest that we've been asked to go offshore. Would we go further? Absolutely. We haven't had the need to at this stage. But yeah, we don't feel restricted by the distance offshore. And what we've also found is that the vessels, that they are small vessels, but they would sit more in the water than on the water. So what we find is that they're very good at managing fairly nasty conditions. You know, we don't have a crew on board, so we don't need to have structure on the deck that protects the crew on board. So therefore, we just let waves just break over the boat. We just let waves. So you could almost say that it's it's semi-wave piercing and semi-submersible in that we don't mind if the decks are awash. That means that we have very little reaction to the sea conditions. So yeah, we're quite comfortable sending them out in pretty gnarly conditions.
So what's next for Exocean?
I'd say for us, the buzzword in our business really is scaling. We plan to continue, as I said earlier, pushing the technology envelope, you know, bringing on new capabilities to the business. But really, the key for us is around scaling the business internationally. So To date, we have offices in Ireland, in the UK and in Canada, but our plan is to open up more regions over the coming period of time and starting to base more of our USVs in other countries so that they're available for those markets. So by the end of next year, we've currently got 11 boats in service with 4 more in build. We expect to be up to 40 vessels by the end of next year. And instead of them all being located around our centre here in Ireland, it's about having them positioned strategically throughout our markets internationally. So yeah, it's an expansion and scaling challenge for us ahead.
Hey, well, I wish you all the success with it over the coming years.
Thanks very much.
So Exocean, they're SUT corporate members. Thanks very much for that. What does it mean to an organization like Exocean to be SUT members?
So I think we're a relatively newcomer to the industry, and we've got a relatively short history in this specific part of the industry. So I think SUT membership really gives us access to really a wider community that are involved in survey and subsea work, and maybe in different sectors than we currently operate in. So I think that's a great benefit. And I'd also say I think the special interest groups are a valuable place for us to discuss technology with other industry participants and really to promote best practice in the offshore industry. So I think it provides a network for us, and that's something we're very grateful for and keen to be part of that community.
Well, thanks very much for that, James. It's always great to hear how the SUT can help organisations such as yourselves to flourish. So that's been a really interesting insight into the workings of Exocean, learning about combining uncrewed surface vessels with a very broad survey capability. So it's great to hear that that's a successful venture. Leaves me to ask if the audience want to find out more about Exocean and what they do, how best do they go about doing that?
Yeah, so we're very, very happy if anybody wants to drop me a line directly. Probably the easiest is just email. So james.ives@exocean.com. Yeah, very happy to hear from people that share our interest in what we're doing and happy to take those requests.
Great. Thanks for that, James. And we'll include details for the Exocean website and as you say, contacts in the podcast description. So please check out there if you want to get in touch. And we'll finish on a high note with a recurring feature of Subsea Facts. You've had a broad experience in industry, non-subsea and subsea, but is there anything that you've come across as an unusual or interesting subsea fact that you can share with us?
Yeah, well, I guess being an engineer and maybe even going back to the early part of my career in the automotive sector, I'm always really interested in energy. And I think the fact that I really like, which is around our technology, is that, you know, we're effectively running a fully equipped survey ship, and it's got multi-beam systems, support and profilers, SVPs, propulsion systems, control systems, all manner of systems that you would find on a large vessel. But we're running all of that on less energy than it takes to boil a kettle, which I think is really quite a remarkable energy balance. And I guess if we were to look by comparison, you're probably talking about a fully crewed vessel requiring maybe 1,000 times that energy to do the same task. So yeah, energy and the ocean is probably my interesting fact.
Well, that's an excellent statistic and an excellent comparison. I mean, the amount of fuel power required to drive full-size survey vessels, you know, is significant. So to be 1,000th of that is a great result. So excellent work. So again, thanks very much, James. It's been really interesting speaking with you and learning about Exocean. As I say, I wish you all the best.
Great. Really appreciate it. And thanks for the invite to be on today.
And thanks to the audience for tuning in. We'll look forward to having you with us again on another podcast.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. To find out more about SUT, go to sut.org. If you'd like to get in touch with us about appearing on a future episode, or to find out how you can sponsor an upcoming episode, contact info@sut.org. You can also follow SUT on social media. We're on Twitter @SUT_news, Instagram @Society for Underwater, Facebook @Society for Underwater Technology, and LinkedIn @SUT-Society for Underwater Technology. Please don't forget to like, rate and subscribe to the podcast, and we'll be back with a new episode next week.